This is episode 2B of Free as in Freedom for Tuesday, June 5th, 2012. Hi, I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn.
This is Free as in Freedom.
And you have an announcement that people already know if they read your blog.
That's right.
People who only listen to this don't know, presumably.
That's right. And I feel a little bit weird announcing such things to the world. But
do you want me to announce it?
No, I blogged about it. So I'm pregnant.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's just not a topic that's that interesting.
No, I agree.
I always feel bad when they... Because they tell you in charm school or whatever, which I didn't really go to charm school, but they basically they tell you when.
No, you didn't. I'm sorry.
But they tell you when you like dealing with people, and like it's classic for salespeople or whoever. When you deal with people, you're supposed to like ask after their kids and all this stuff, and it's like the fact of the matter is like I never ask after people's... I mean, I ask after your kid because we're friends separately from professional. But if somebody... I just know somebody professionally, I don't ask about their whole stuff, their personal life. It's their personal life. I mean, I think it's intrusive to be
what about the kids? Well, I sometimes do. If people bring them up, you know, I think it's nice if they're thinking about them and they say that, it's nice to remember it and to follow up, because it means that if they were thinking about it one time you talk, that they probably are thinking about it later. And so it's nice in that way. But I feel pretty awkward about it because the societally approved reaction is to say congratulations, but it's such a weird thing to say.
The whole thing is weird.
I agree. It's very, very strange. But in any event, so if you guys see any talks that I give from here on out, you'll probably notice. So I'll be most likely very visibly pregnant at GWADEC, for example.
And OSCON if you go.
And OSCON if I go. Yeah.
So it's just for people keeping tabs on where we'll be. Karen will definitely be at GWADEC. I will definitely not be there. Mm-hmm. So you can see Karen at GWADEC. You might be able to see Karen at OSCON. You can definitely see me at OSCON, not speaking. They didn't want any of my talks. But I will be there as an attendee wandering around, feeling dejected because I don't have a talk accepted.
I think you should be excited to be at a conference and not have to speak.
It will be a nice relaxing relief. It will be relaxing.
Nice break.
That part is true. It'll be relaxing. Yeah. But I feel like I'm a nobody if I'm not speaking. The bar is set so high.
The thing is, I don't know. I love going to conferences when I'm not speaking. I mean, I don't get to do it that often because it's hard to justify the expense.
I have this in common with RMS. My attitude is like, what's the point in going if you're not speaking? But.
Well, there's a lot of good work that can be done.
I suppose that.
Most of the real work is behind the scenes. I mean, it's not really like, you know, I feel like some of the advocacy that we do in our speeches is effective and makes a big difference. But on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of real work that gets done because you're in the same place as a lot of people.
Yeah, and I'll be at, I just got confirmed yesterday, I'll be at LinuxCon North America and LinuxCon Europe both.
Cool.
Probably be speaking at both, although I don't know what I'll be speaking about yet. And for this show, we've been threatening for some time that we would have guests again. And after much audio wrangling and even more work that poor Dan Lynch is going to have to do, our intrepid producer Dan, we will have a guest coming up in the next segment.
And can we just say also a thank you to producer Dan for doing the extra special episode last time?
Yes, he did. He did it off week. He did it in conflict with Rat Hole Radio, which is always tough for him because he has to do our edit and do his Rat Hole Radio, which you should all listen to if you like music at all, which I don't, so I don't listen, but I know most people do. So if you like music at all, Rat Hole Radio, Dan Lynch's show, our producer, it's a great way to hear about music that's available under free software licenses, or free music licenses, I guess I should say.
And without further ado, the interview.
Yeah, the interview's up next. So, Karen, our next guest has the great honor of being the first actual sort of phone-in type guest on Free as in Freedom.
Yeah, because we've done some interviews, but they've all been in person because we haven't had the equipment set up. But...
And our next guest, who we're about to introduce, was very nice to set up a free software set up. She's using GNOME 2, not GNOME 3, but she's using free software and got it all set up to record.
But listeners won't be surprised that she's using free software when we introduce that it's Deb Nicholson.
and Deb Nicholson might be known to people from her work as a staffer at the FSF, but more recently she works for the Open Invention, or Open OIN, which stands for what, Deb?
Open Invention Network. So I work there, and I also put my time in at Media Goblin. So I'm split time right now.
Oh, that's great. And actually, Media Goblin, I just said on a recent show that Media Goblin is the great bastion of using the AGPL in the right way. So I'm certainly a fan of GNU Media and Goblin, and your colleague Chris Weber, who runs it. And we actually might have him on a later show. Now that this is working, we're gonna reach out to him to talk about that. But what we had you on is to tell us a little bit more about OIN, and then we'll maybe talk about how much I hate OIN, and we can sort it all out together. But why don't you first introduce for our listeners just what OIN is and what it does, if they don't remember from the panel discussion we had before.
Okay, great. So the Open Invention Network is a defense and patent pool for GNU Linux on the desktop, Linux on mobile platforms. It's basically like a mutual non-aggression tool. Companies sign up with us and they agree not to sue each other on the stuff in the pool. And then they have defensive resources for if they get sued by other companies outside the pool working on similar technology.
And who can sign up for OIN?
Anyone who is willing to agree to the mutual non-aggression piece. So if you're using if you have patents related to Linux in your portfolio, but you want to use them for aggression, then you can't, then you, it's not a good fit. But if you're sick of the aggression and you want to get off that merry-go-round, then we'd love to have you.
And what is patents related to Linux mean? Like, how is that defined?
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of them, and I'm not an attorney. So if you're going to ask me like super specific questions, I'll already.
Oh no, I just tell generally for our listeners, because you know I know, but give a general overview for our listeners.
Right. So basically, it's GNU Linux on the desktop, and then increasingly, it's more and more Linux on the mobile platform. So everything from like the compiler tools all the way up to office efficiency tools.
Right.
And then in the mobile space, which I'm a little less familiar with, there's a lot of development tools there, but there's also like mobile desktops and stuff like that, or whatever you call a desktop without a desk.
Right, and there's actually this thing called the Linux system definition that OIM publishes, right, which is on your website. So people could actually go and read that, which of course I have done, because
thank you. There is a great resource for looking at all the specifics on our website.
And all the packages are named and everything like that. And didn't you guys just expand the definition recently, too?
We did, actually. It had been a little while, and it's, you know that thing about, like, the most efficient meeting is the one where just one person shows up? We never get to have those meetings, so it took us a little bit of back and forth to decide what was the best direction to go forward on updating the Linux system definition. Although, the first time wasn't as painful as we thought, so I think we're going to be doing it more regularly, which is great, and we're also soliciting more input from the wider community and not just our founding members and our licensees. So, like, Karen, you probably actually have an email asking if GNOME has stuff that should be in the updated version of the Linux system definition.
Yeah, I just got that email and was very excited about it.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I mean, actually, Keith asked me, Keith is your boss, Keith Bergelt at the OIN.
Yep.
And our longtime listeners will have heard me criticize OIN before in various different ways. And one of the classic criticisms I have, somewhat to my chagrin, I can't make anymore because it is in the middle of changing, because Keith did come up to me at Linux Collaboration Summit and said, we've heard what you've said, and we want send me any packages you think ought to be on the list. Just send me a list. Anything you think should be on there. And I actually have to follow up on that, but that's a new thing from OIN, which I really appreciate, because it was one of my primary criticisms. And I mean, the jury's still out, because we'll have to see once we submit these things if they're put onto the list. But assuming they're submitted and everything the community says wants to be on the list gets on the list, then it's a much improvement, I think.
Well, and I think that it's really critical to have a lot of developer input on that process, even if it's mean, I think one of the things that is a challenge for OIN is that we're stewardshipping, I guess, a tool for developers at the end, but it's very lawyery. And there's only a certain length of conversation that most developers want to have about legal issues. And so, but we do definitely need that input, and I think it's really important. And the more easily, you know, the more easy we can make the process of giving us that input, the better.
Actually, you know, one thing that I think might be really helpful for our listeners is, you know, we talk about the system definition getting expanded and the stewardship of OIN, but maybe if you could briefly explain sort of who those stewards are and how some of that decisions get made, because I think looking at the OIN site, it's sometimes hard to see, you know, since anyone can sign up for OIN, but there's a decision-making process that's only by certain members. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's six companies that originally decided, and there are larger companies that had the wherewithal also to fund this initiative. They decided that they would prefer to not get sued by each other on stuff within the Linux system definition. And then there was a process of winnowing down. As I'm sure you guys are aware, many large companies have interests like all over the board in technology. And so the thing we were able to get folks to agree on was, let's at least agree to mutual non-aggression on the Linux system. And that's, you know, that's, you can hear the capital L, capital S there. And so that's who's traditionally decided, like, what's been in there. But, we are looking to get more input because we want it to be a useful, resource for the wider community beyond the six, founding companies. I think, and I know that seems, that may seem opaque from the website, but the website's also a little, well, it's sparse, and I'm aware of that. So
I mean, that sort of dovetails into the question that I wanted to ask, which is the thing that I'm still sort of concerned about, not just sort of, but definitely concerned about OIN, is its governance structure. So what kind of organization is it as far as its corporate status and who governs it? Who's in charge, who's in control of OIN?
Right. So it is the six founding companies, which is, let me think, IBM, Red Hat, NEC, Sony, who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting too. I'll remember in a second. But, and so, yeah, and it functions, it's incorporated as a for-profit. And, you know, and I well know, like, your, personal, concerns with a for-profit versus a non-profit. Because at heart, a nonprofit has written into its governance structure what its goal is. But OIN's goal is largely this one thing, to provide this defensive resource, and everyone is contractually bound to act in good faith on that. So it's weird, and I was surprised myself to find out that we are actually incorporated as a for-profit because it does, it functions weirdly for a for-profit, but I don't think a nonprofit structure is the right thing for that either. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would argue that the C6 is kind of the right structure that you would want.
C6
sort of
being a trade association.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about.
Oh,
this.
Yeah, I know what a C6 is, and yeah.
Karen was doing that for our listeners who might have forgotten. Not you. We know you know. It's our listeners. We need to make sure know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry. I forget we're always like, because we're not looking at each other and having a camera representing the unseen listener.
Right. Yeah, go ahead. But you were going to say, Deb, about C6s?
Oh, jeez. Corporate structure quiz. I wasn't planning.
No, you were going to make a point, and
we interrupted you because we didn't want you to think we didn't think you knew a lot about this stuff.
I'm desperately trying to get this conversation back on topic. Deb had a point she was going to make before we got off on this tangent. So you were going to say something in response to the point about C6s, which was?
Oh, yeah, I'm not super familiar with C6s, but I have at least the high level, understanding. And it doesn't, it functions pretty similar, it seems to me in that way.
Your argument is basically, it sounds like that you're a for-profit company, but you're operating very similar to the way a C6 would operate, even though you could operate a different way. Your impression is OIN's choosing to operate.
Yeah, I wasn't here when we decided to incorporate. I'm relatively new. You know, I think it was probably, it's probably a function of our for-profit founding companies not being super familiar with the, you know, like what you can get done with a nonprofit structure. Whereas, like, I know that really well, but, you know, it's having just gone through this process on one of the boards that I'm on, where we just switched from a for-profit entity to a nonprofit entity, the pile of things that people don't know about how nonprofits are structured and how they work before they get there is huge. So,
yeah, I assumed that it was incorporated as a for-profit so that less needed to be disclosed. You know, like, because I think when you're a nonprofit, you have to report a lot to the IRS and to the public, even if you're a C6. But if you're a for-profit, then you don't need to shed as much light on what you do, which gives you more flexibility. Huh. There are pluses and minuses to it.
I have heard the idea that because the resources we have might at some point be used in a legal, you know, in a legal case, that it might be to our advantage for it to be not completely clear how many of us there are over here or what have you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was part of the decision-making process. I haven't bought 4 or 5 new houses or a boat, so it's not to obfuscate my pay. I can't really comment on the rest because that I don't really know.
So our listeners would probably recognize your voice from a previous show because you were one of the panelists back at FOSDEM, which was all the way back in February of this year, 2012, now that we're talking. And we did broadcast that on episode 25. And as you know, I made some comments after about what I thought of the panel. And I wanted to give you a chance to respond to our comments, because that's how the idea of bringing you on the show got started. You would email me some comments, and I'd love for our listeners to hear what you had to say, and then I'll probably, of course, respond thereafter.
Yeah, we went back and forth a little bit, but I guess the part that I was the most disappointed about was to hear myself referred to as disingenuous, and I certainly don't intend to be disingenuous. There's definitely stuff I don't know, which is not the same. I had sent you, Bradley, for our listeners. a note saying that I thought, you know, we have agreed, on many things in the past, and we don't agree on, OIN's work and its, niche within the community. But I thought that using the word disingenuous somewhat, crossed the line and made it a little bit more of a personal discussion than we had normally had in the past on really any topic. And so I sent you, probably a pretty wordy note, but then I got an even wordier note back. So,
that is true. I was just reviewing them, and I can confirm that my email back was probably 3 times as long as Deb's initial email, because I'm sadly verbose. That's one of my worst traits, in fact, is that I'm way too verbose. The point I made in my response to Deb, which I mean, I apologize if you felt that I was calling you disingenuous as a person, and to the extent to which I didn't speak clearly enough, and it sounded like I was saying Deb was a disingenuous person. I don't believe that at all. That's not true. I think actually Deb is one of the most sincere people that I know, in fact. So for me to say that would be like completely counter to what I believe. But I think the point that you made, it was a disingenuous point. And the key point I was focused on is you had made a comment about IBM and saying, oh, well, OIN is, you know, OIN's the organization that wouldn't attack free software projects with patents, and that OIN's about avoiding getting free software attacked by patents. And in fact, IBM has attacked free software with patents. So specifically, the Turbo Hercules project was attacked with IBM patents. And those patents are not in Linux system definition, so it's not that IBM was violating the OIN agreement, but IBM is known to attack some free software projects. And it was that point, I felt the point was disingenuous, because it glossed over the fact that some of OIN's members are patent aggressors in other contexts,
well,
just not in the OIN context.
Yeah, as I said before, most of our founding members have interest in a lot of different aspects of technology that have nothing to do with Linux, either on the desktop or in mobile space. And so, they're still working on suing other companies over patent infringement in those other areas. It gets confusing because I certainly cannot speak for all of the departments of all of our founding members. I can only say what the pieces of those companies that are working on Linux stuff and where they're at and where they are, you know, happily contractually obligated in regards to the stuff that OIN covers. So it's, yeah, it's a little tricky, and a panel discussion can get kind of confusing because it's a lot of people talking at once too, but I know I said, like, yes, we're working on free software, and that's a shorthand because otherwise I have to say, like, you know, GNU Linux on the desktop and Linux on mobile, stuff that right. we have gotten everybody to agree to be non-aggressive on, you know, with some, like, extra development tools where people wanted them, and then some possible gaps which, like, nobody in our organization cared about or was interested in including. So it's, yeah, so as a shorthand, I often say free software,
right.
but that might be, you know, I don't mean that in the same way that, I don't mean for people to say all free software, because we aren't able to do that yet.
Right. So. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's been one of my primary criticisms of OIM, which could get better. I mean, I think the door is open for that to get better, because now we can increase the Linux system definition. When the Linux system definition was so static for so long, my fear was basically that was being declared the only neutral territory from patents in the free software space, and that everything else was fair game for attack. And that was, I was really concerned about that, because it was sort of, I felt it was taking a lot of air out of the room of the anti-software patent zeitgeist in free software, because it was sort of saying, we sort of have like this weird peace treaty agreement that's not really a full peace treaty, but people were pretending that it was. And I feel like that the Linux system definition still has that problem, but if we could expand it, maybe it'll go away.
Yeah, I don't know about the pretending, but I mean, I can see how it seemed that way, like if you're waiting for something to grow and get bigger, and then it's keeping people from pursuing other tactics, then I can see that frustration. I think you see the same in other kinds of community organized movements. I think we spoke on the phone a little bit about the environmental movement, that sometimes different aspects of the environmental movement feel hamstrung by the tactics of their colleagues. You know, it's like,
right. Well, I mean, the radical is sort of, in fact, go ahead, Karen, you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Deb, that you actually made a really good point on the panel, which is that in this post-Bilski world where, you know, abolishing software patents doesn't seem to be around the corner, that, you know, regardless, we sort of need to explore as many different options as we can.
Yeah, my option is patent trolls for free software, but that's another topic for another show.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, like, I see it as more like the Nature Conservancy. Like, are we going to, like... is our society going to stop, like, pumping coal and dirt and mercury into the atmosphere and the water? Like, no. But in the meantime, we can just buy up land, and that will be, you know, unsoiled. So it's in that way, it's like, okay, if we're not going to see the abolition of software patents across the board anytime soon, then we can at least make sure that we don't bleed the free software companies dry in the meantime. Or, you know, companies that are working to build free software projects like Linux and Linux on mobile. So
yeah, I mean, it's you make a convincing argument. I'm not convinced, but I can see why.
You're not.
I think something cool that you personally said, just talk about you personally for a minute. I was giving you a hard time, because I always give you a hard time now that you work for OIN, and I was giving you a hard time at Scale at your talk, and I made the point that OIN is not anti-software patent, and I think organizations should all be anti-software patent because software patents are wrong. And you said, well, OIN only pays me half time. If somebody wants to pay me the other half time to fight against software patents, I will.
Well, you know, I spend a lot of time reading about them already. So, you know, if you can come up with the funding for that, let me know.
Well, I have a plan for that, but that's another topic. But
I don't know how sold I am on the patent trolls for free software project, but
yeah, it's pretty right. It's radical even for me. So it's pretty far over the top. But
I feel like you have to get Stephen Colbert to back that one for it to really get wigged.
So
like,
it's
got to be like all in or not at all. It like a Kickstarter or something, whatever, you know, like $2,000 for patent trolls against software patents isn't going to cut it. Like, $2 billion? Like, yeah.
You can get my theory is $100,000 would do it. But anyway, Karen, you were going
to
say.
Oh, I was just going to say that I would actually go back to the topic that we started on. I want to go back to the use of the term disingenuous and sort of.
Well, I thought I got past that. Now I'm going to be ripped over the coals.
I'm not going to rip you over the coals. I'm actually going to say that I find that I've actually used the word disingenuous myself and launched it against other people. But I think, you know, and I'm questioning whether that's a really good idea. But I think that I'm you know, often for me as a woman speaking it publicly, especially on panels, I'm very cognizant of the terms that other people use when they're criticizing me. And I find that when people use certain terms, one that has been used a number of times is what you're trying to say is, and you know, and various things that turn the conversation from being merely a discussion about ideas to a commentary on you as a person, and makes it very personal. And I think that it's just, I wanted to mention that because I think it's important for people to be aware that this happens, and it's a very subtle attack. And I think it's often unintentional, or you know, for whatever reason, used against women. And it's just worth pointing out so that we're sort of more cognizant of the language that we use and choose. You're smiling at me.
Well, it's just, I mean, I want to say again that I do not think Deb is a disingenuous person. And if my comments were construed or believed to be that, or it sounded like that's what I was saying, which I don't think it did, but if it did, it wasn't my intent at all. And I apologize if I said the wrong thing, I apologize for saying the wrong thing. I don't think I did. So I'm not going to apologize for the statement because I went back and listened and I was very careful. I was saying
that's a disingenuous thing to say.
And I think it's possible for very genuine people, which I think I'm a genuine person too. I've made disingenuous comments. Karen's told me at times.
I think I've used the word disingenuous against you.
And so I think anybody can make a disingenuous comment. I mean, I think Karen's right in saying that it's a difference between saying, well, that thing you just said, that was a disingenuous statement, or that was whatever, and then saying the person is that. And that's subtle, and you can screw it up. And if I did, I apologize.
Without making
I think in the moment it sounded like you said, I think that the representative from OIN is being disingenuous, as opposed to, I think that comment is disingenuous, that gets down to a level of nitpicking that, you know, now that I understand your intention better, is fine. I don't care. And,
well, I think the representative from OIN on the call today is a genuine person who occasionally makes disingenuous comments, and I will go on record as saying that.
I can still disagree.
I think that's the point Karen's making.
An improvement over what you said on the other Faithcast.
So. Okay, yeah, I apologize if I made it sound like I was saying a thing I didn't mean, and I didn't mean to say it.
That I accept your apology.
So Karen, you were trying to say something there.
No,
I really liked what you were saying there, because I feel like many of us in the free software movement agree on somewhere between 75% and 95% of the stuff. And then because it's very important, and it feels like the mind share for listening to us talk about free software to the wider community is limited, like the amount of the time slice we get. And so people get very emotional. And I think I've seen on more than one occasion, and I'm not looking at Bradley, you know, where folks have said stuff that sounds like a personal attack, and it makes the community as a whole look contentious, if not outright, you know, a little bit nutty, and you know, maybe a bit like a battlefield. And so I don't think that I think when that goes like too rampant, that kind of personal attack, it doesn't do us any favors in bringing whatever message to the wider community. So I think it is worth keeping in mind.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, that's basically why I brought it up, because I think that a lot of our listeners are the audience listening to a lot of these talks. And I think once you're aware that some of these tactics are used rhetorically, well, I wasn't commenting on this particular you know, case, whether it was or wasn't. But when you're aware that these rhetorical tactics are used, you become a much more informed listener. And it takes them the steam out of those personal attacks. And I think you're right, because they don't help us as a community working together.
Right. And especially when, if they are motivated by gender, you said that you had heard what I think she's trying to say, which is a really, disempowering way to refer to a colleague. But I had occasion, maybe it was like a year ago, to tell someone that shrill is really loaded and super bad. Like, if you're talking about a woman that you don't agree with and you're saying shrill, we always know whose voices are shrill. Like, most men, with, you know, their all their parts still attached, aren't capable of shrill. And so, to dismiss someone's comments by the timbre of their voice
Hysterical.
Huge problem.
Is another one that's used almost entirely at women.
Well, I guess I feel somewhat advanced, because I stopped using the word hysterical in my teens. And I think it's been about 12 years since I used the word shrill to describe anything but an electronic sound. So I'll describe oh my gosh, that fire alarm is so shrill. But I won't say it about a person.
You know, it's another, I'm sorry, this is another, like, I'm like, oh, you know what somebody once said to me? They said, you're harping on this point. And it was like,
ooh, harping is
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, does that come from, etymologically, does that come from harpy, or does that come from harp like a play harp?
It's a harpy.
It does
a
come from harpy.
Like in the Greco-Roman mythology, it's like an ugly bird lady that keeps making nasty sounds.
And doesn't stop.
Crazy or something like that. Yeah.
So I never knew that was so loaded, because I thought it came from the musical instrument, not from the mythological
figure.
No,
that would be a positive.
That would be nice if you could reclaim harp. Maybe there are harpists out there reclaiming it and being like, that's right. I'm totally harping on this.
I find harp music really annoying, though, so I don't know if that works. Harp, the sound of a harp is quite shrill, actually.
I think it depends on the size of the harp. The size totally matters there.
This is probably a good time to mention that Deb and I are both advisors of the ADA Initiative, and the ADA Initiative just received their 501c3 tax status. So, So if you're listening to this and you think that some of the stuff that we've said has resonated with you, or and you see sort of the value, but also the challenges that Deb and I sometimes face as speakers. We're also women, and if you generally want to support women in technology, you should go ahead and go and donate to them. We'll include their link in the show notes, right, Bradley? Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was nodding. That's really good for audio. So Deb, before we wrap up, I wanted to give you a chance. I mean, obviously, I think we are going to try to have Chris Weber on at some point, especially now that, like I said, we have the technology working. But is there anything you wanted to briefly say about GNU Media Goblin or any of your other projects? We talked mostly about OIN here and some about gender issues, which I think are important too. But I want to give you an opportunity. Anything you want to say about your other projects you're working on?
Oh, sure. So, the other two projects that I also serve on the board at OpenHatch, and I do the community management for Media Goblin. I'll take Media Goblin first, I guess. So we recently celebrated our 1-year anniversary, which is really exciting, and we're in the process of looking at ways to get more paid development time happening on that project. Media Goblin, just to back up for folks that are not aware of it, it's a GNU project. It is, we're building decentralized media hosting software. And so, the media hosting part is largely there for many formats of video. HTML5 video is there, ASCII art, which was fun, some sound, and, of course, pictures. And then, the decentralized part is, the bit that we're working on now. So it's a Python project, and if you're listening and you're interested in working on decentralized media hosting and either know Python or want to learn Python, then you should come find us on IRC.
And what's the IRC channel, Deb?
Friendly. It's Pound Media Goblin on Freenode, where all the other flossy stuff is. And then the other project I work on, or I guess should I, did you guys have questions about Media Goblin? I don't know if I answered everything. No, I think you guys know.
Yeah, we know, and I think that's a good enough general overview. And like I said, we're going to try to schedule Chris for a later show, and he'll tell us more about it. So do you want to tell us about Open Hatch?
Sure. So Open Hatch is a project started by my friend Ashish Laroya, and it is Free Software's welcoming committee. So we have little training missions on the website, all kinds of resources, places for new developers or developers who are already familiar with a programming language but haven't found a project to plug into, a place where they can find bite-sized bugs. So we do that on the website, and then we also work on building in-person events that are, help us to get more folks into free software. So one of those partnerships is the Boston Python Workshops to teach Python to women and their friends for absolute beginners. We've also been doing one called Open Source Comes to Campus, where we go and work with CS students and talk to them about, hey, maybe you don't want to work for Microsoft when you graduate. Here's a whole other world of software that you could get involved with. And so we do those in-person projects. So I serve on the board. She's in the powerhouse. Great to watch, and it's great to support him. So you can come see us openhatch.org or pound openhatch on Freenode.
And I actually had one more question, which was I was requested to ask by Mike Tarantino, the author of our theme music. He wanted to know if your band is playing anytime soon.
We just did a concert maybe 2 weeks ago, because we released a 7-inch on vinyl. So it's on Bandcamp, which is not, software-wise, I'm not the person who handles the web hosting stuff for our site, although, when we get around to licensing, I'll have a lot to say. But so far, it's just available on Bandcamp for streaming or on vinyl, which I don't usually bring to conferences with me, but if you want one, I'll bring one.
And what's your part in the band, Deb?
I'm the vocalist, so...
And it's really good. We were listening to it the other day.
Oh, you were?
We were.
So you said you haven't dealt with the licensing. Is it CC by SA licensed or CC
we
by...
We haven't licensed it at all yet. It's just out there for the world.
Well, you know what you should do is, you should make sure that it's freely licensed in some way, because then maybe our producer Dan Lynch will play it on Rat Hole Radio. He does a whole show. I guess we should plug that too. Dan Lynch does a bi-weekly show where he plays CC by SA music and fine stuff called Rat Hole Radio. And so I bet he would love to play you if you license it freely.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, we just never even talked about it. Like, it took us so long to do the mixing that we never got around to talking about the licensing.
So Deb, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I was really great, and I'm glad we were able to have that conversation with our listeners present or listening, so that they can hear you and me go at it,
Oh yeah, great. And when are we gonna go at it in person again?
I don't know, because I'll be at OSCON. I'll be at OSCON, and I'll be at LinuxCon North America and LinuxCon Europe. Those are the only ones I have coming up. Are you gonna be at any of those, Deb?
I'll be at OSCON.
Okay, well, we'll all be there then, because you're going, right, Karen? Or yeah,
I think so.
Okay.
Oh, you are. Okay.
I'm not 100% decided, but I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it'd be great. Maybe we can have another, copy left geek lunch or something.
So fun.
Yeah. Okay. So thanks for being on our show, Deb.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Bye, Deb.
So Deb's a busy person.
Yeah.
On different projects, but mostly
she's very eloquent about them.
That is definitely true, and so I'm glad she wrote to me, and I'm glad we clarified. And it was also a catalyst for us to get a guest on, because I felt that she had an issue to raise that was a legitimate issue to raise, and I felt it was good to get her on the air to raise it.
I think it's pretty fun, because a lot of the times when we do things like this, there is back channel afterwards, and nobody really knows about it. It just sort of.
Yeah, and people, because we don't have forums. Although our IRC channel is relatively active these days, although it's the same usual suspects. I mean, it's probably like 12 or 13 people who are regularly in there. But if you want to come join, there is usually discussion pretty much every day now. Karen and I don't participate all that much. I think we're both now idle in the channel all the time, but usually you have to say our names to get our attention.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I'm so busy with other things that I don't notice it until the conversation's already too old.
Yeah.
But But in any event, like, as per usual, we're, you know, we're going to be probably lagging behind the times a little. There's a bunch of stuff that's come up recently.
Well, it was a heavy news week in the end. It's funny because when I was shopping around the story that we talked about on our last show regarding Conservancy's GPL compliance efforts, a number of journalists sort of said, well, you're announcing this on the Fedora release day. And I said, well, yeah, it's a Fedora release. I said, this happens sometimes. You know, it'll be a heavy news day. But the thing that I didn't know was going to happen, and amusingly enough, it shows how people have different roles and they don't really cross, because Matthew Garrett, even though he's working directly with us on GPL compliance activities at Conservancy in the GPL compliance program for Linux developers, he did not mention to me at all during all that, which is completely appropriate. I'm not upset about it, but I didn't know that with this Fedora release, they were going to be announcing their policy for dealing with UEFI. And it's a different role that Matthew has, because he's doing that as, you know, both as an individual developer, which has nothing to do with compliance, GPL compliance, really. Although some people have raised questions about whether Fedora is what they're doing is compliant with the GPL, and there was a lot of discussion on Matthew's blog about that. And I have it on good authority that there will be a statement from FSF about its views on UEFI. There's already the restricted boot campaign.
Yeah.
FSF's already said quite a bit about UEFI, but they're going to be updating those statements because Matthew's statements will be there. In light of Matthew's statements,
right,
they'll also be updating some stuff. And I don't actually know what, I mean, the FSF staff's working on that and looking into it. So they actually are paying close attention to that and are going to be probably having a statement. The reason I'm so willing to say this is because it's supposed to be Monday, which means this will be out on Tuesday and probably it'll already be up. And if not, it'll be up very soon.
Cool. So we'll probably talk about that down the road. And also,
yeah, I think I want to do a whole show. We haven't really talked about UEFI in great detail.
We haven't
mentioned it 3 or 4 times.
Well,
but we never
actually,
talked
didn't
in
we
detail.
Do one show about it?
We did a show about Grub, but that wasn't about UEFI specifically.
Oh.
Now you're making me look at the back catalog.
I'm not sure.
I don't think we've actually talked in detail. I don't remember if we talked.
But yeah, I'd like to do a show about it too. And
so I think we want to do a show about UEFI.
And clearly, more has come out on.
And obviously, I do work with Matthew Garrett regularly, and so I can't promise this. I'm not promising a guest, but I will float the idea with Matthew Garrett.
I was going to just say that, but I didn't want to even mention it.
I'm not going to say we can do it. And Matthew's very, very busy. I know because I work with him on a project. And so I know that he's busy with lots of projects all at once. And so, but we'll make the ask and see if maybe Matthew can be on and see if he can talk more about the UEFI stuff. And if not, we'll just sort of cover the whole gamut of all the stuff people are saying. And the other thing that I wanted to cover, and I was talking with Karen about this privately on IRC just last week, I'd really like to go through and do a really in-depth sort of, at this point, a post-mortem of Google.
Well, but it's not really necessarily just a post-mortem, because I was talking to lawyers who were involved in the case and asking an individual particularly, if that person would want to come on our show and talk about the case, and was told that because there's going to be an appeal, they're really limited in what they can talk about. So, you know, it's still somewhat ongoing, but
right,
it's very interesting to talk about.
Here.
I don't know that we need to go through, like, the whole docket, but I think we should talk about the decisions.
Yeah.
And
Karen said I was wasting my time to read the whole docket.
I just think reading the decisions is the most important thing.
Agreed, but I'm curious to having...
There's
having...
no stopping Bradley.
Yeah, and I don't have a life, so I mean, Karen was like, you have too much time. Like, are you doing enough work for
like,
Conservancy?
I was like, you have more time than I do.
Yeah, well, you see, it's sort of hidden in it was, are you actually pulling your way to Conservancy if you have time to read the whole document? But probably on some weekend day.
No, I wouldn't suggest that.
Oh, you were suggesting that. Because you're busy doing GNOME stuff, and you were suggesting, hey, wait a second, how do you have time for that? You don't have time for that. I think I'm probably on some Saturday morning I'll sort of go through and read at least the complaint and the answer and those sorts of things.
Oh, I see, because you haven't read the okay.
Yeah, I haven't read any of it. I haven't had time to follow it.
I skimmed the complaints because that was the news back then.
Yeah, but no, I didn't read any of it because, I mean, I just read the news articles.
Okay,
I read the
them.
News articles, which I know were wrong, but I figured it's the best I can do right now. I mean, Conservancy's been up to a lot, as we talked about last week. So there's a lot going on in Conservancy. So basically Oracle v. Google does not impact Conservancy, especially now with the APIs not being copyrightable. That would have been the most place where we would have been worried.
Yep.
As Conservancy, because we do have people who implement APIs in Conservancy. But I mean, with that settled, I mean, certainly the patent fight was of no interest. I mean, we're Conservancy against software patents, and people can go fight about them. And we don't have any projects written in Java either, so there was that too.
Right. Well, I guess...
We would love for you to apply if you're written in Java, but we have not had any...
What's interesting is that we've had moments in this show where we've sort of said, when are we, like, we're running out of things to talk about. How can our show remain interesting? And then it just seems like we can't even keep up with the news cycles.
Well, yeah, and I think that's, I mean, I think there are enough topics, and I think that people should treat this show, we don't want to be a news show,
no.
And we can't be because of Karen's and my limited time, but we can digest things and really talk about them after and give you some in-depth analysis, and I think we want to do that. We have to schedule the time for us to do the research because we don't want to present to you something that's half-baked that we haven't done the research on.
That's why we like including talks, because then other people do the research.
Well, true enough.
That we just react to it.
Yeah, but we've got...
But no, it's time to come back to our substantive talks.
Of all people, get this, of all people this week, Richard Fontana was complaining to me that we have too many talks, when in fact his talks have been presented like 3 times.
That's maybe why he's complaining.
No, but he likes his talks to be presented. I think he was making, in addition to go back to our interview, I think Richard Fontana was making a disingenuous comment.
So basically what's happening here is that Bradley is inviting Fontana to come into the channel on Faith and argue about this.
Yeah, well, which is fine. Also, we've invited Richard on as a guest, and he's working on getting audio equipment, which I just today at record date, which is the Friday before you're hearing this, sent him again the email of what he needs to ask Fab at Linux Outlaws to get these stuff. And apparently, I'm sorry, Fab is a co-host with Dan Lynch of a show called Linux Outlaws. We got recent criticism that mentioned Fab and Dan. Dan Lynch, our producer on this show. He also has his own show that I mentioned a little while ago, Rat Hole Radio. And also, he's co-hosting a different show called Linux Outlaws, which is sort of a news and info show for Linux related topics, really GNU/Linux related topics, although Fab hates GNU/. and Fab, he's the co-host. And I can't pronounce Fab's last name right, despite speaking a little bit of German, so I won't, but it's Dan and Fab of Linux Outlaws. That's what I was referring to. But Fab is supposed to get some info to Fontana about what audio equipment to buy so he can have a mic. And I also gave him a backup option, which was $40, which he can afford.
Okay, this is stop being interesting.
Okay, well, I just want to call Fontana out to buy his microphone, and he can be a guest as soon as he gets a microphone.
Cool. Freeze and Freedom is produced by Dan Lynch of Pod Factory and can be found at podfactory.org. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This episode of Freeze and Freedom is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. You can follow Freeze and Freedom, Bradley, and Karen on Identica, and also read Bradley's and Karen's blogs. Links can be found on the Freeze and Freedom website, faif.us. That's faif.us.